B-Pod Studios.
Farsetta and Trey in the morning.
We got to talk some more 76ers. And on the line with us right now from NBC Sports Philadelphia, the great Mark Jackson. What's happening, sir?
What's going on, fellas? How are you today?
Oh, we good, man.
We got the win. Mark, we got the win last night. Ultimately, that's all that matters. But we also had a story from Joel Embiid come out on Players Tribune that I want to talk to you about in a little bit. But why is it that the Sixers are such a far better team at home than they are on the road?
Like I keep saying, guys, I think it's a mental thing. And people say what I mean by that is it's a mental, and it's a thing where you feel more comfortable playing at home because you got the backing of your crowd. I think it's very important to remember that when you are on the road, you have to rely on each other. It has to be a me against us against the world type of mentality. And I think you can only have that if your team is gelled, if your team has chemistry. That's what helps you win on the road. When your team is kind of still trying to find its footing, trying to mess with each other, before you can go against the opposition on their turf, you have to be together as one. And I believe that's why the 76ers are two different teams from home and away.
Mark, I hate to use this phrase, but we're going to beat a dead horse with things that I know we've talked about before, but the problems keep on happening. The other day, Ben Simmons comes out, 20 points in the first half, and then he disappears in the second half. Yesterday, great performance in the first half, kind of tailed off again in the second half. Not only the home and the road games, but the first half and second half, it seems like there's a totally different version of Ben Simmons. What can Brett Brown do to try to get the most out of Ben for four quarters?
I don't think it's up to Brett Brown. I think it's up to Ben because these situations are occurring far too often. They're occurring almost every single game. If Ben gets going in the first half, you automatically know he's not going to be as aggressive in the second half. It's like a far-gone conclusion. So it's to the point where normally a team, if a guy really has it going in the first half, the opposition would say, okay, let's look to slow LeBron down. Okay, let's look to slow Bradley Beal down. Let's kind of key on him a little bit. Teams don't do that. They say, okay, Ben was aggressive first half. We know he's going to fall off the second half and not be as aggressive. So let's just stick with our guns and look to stop everybody else. And I think when Ben gets the mentality to be aggressive for 48 minutes regardless, I think that's when this team would take a step forward, because if you know a team cannot guard you, if you know you're getting 15 to 18 in the first half, what's preventing you from getting 30 to 40? It's you preventing you from getting that. I think it's important that Ben realizes that and kind of come out of his shell like, okay, I know I'm a point guard, but if they can't stop me, this is the best option for the team. Let me keep it going.
Mark, there's been a lot of talk lately about Brett Brown and you know, whether he's the right fit or whatnot moving on. So I want to ask you, just this team this year, what has Brett done really well in your eyes, and where has he faulted in your eyes?
I think Coach Brett Brown has really made it a how can I say this? Coach Brett Brown has really tried to make adjustments to help the team. He's not sticking with his same philosophy as years past. He's coming a different mentality. He's trying to adjust for what's best for the team. So I really like that. What is he doing? I think I would like to see him do better. That's hard to say because the game fluctuates with what's coming up and down. But I would really like to see, you know, Coach Brett Brown establish himself to Ben. Like, look, Ben, you know, I really think you need to be aggressive for 48 minutes. You know, even if you do got going. We all know Ben's a pass first, pass second kind of guy. I really believe sometimes it takes a coach like Ben, be aggressive, 48 minutes. And I would like to see him get through the bit a little bit more.
Now, just going to the Embiid article real quick, man. When you hear him say, you know, how did you feel about him saying that he's studying guards more than looking at what the bigs are doing in the game and all of that?
Whoa. That goes back to Jurassic Park when he said, we can make dinosaurs, but we haven't stopped to ask ourselves, should we? You know, what I'm saying mean by that is, yes, you might have certain skills, but here's my thing. No matter what you do to your game, how you hone your game, you cannot change your size. So what I got from that is I didn't like it. And I know he said this is not the 90s where he should play down a little post and all that. Here's what I'm saying. you have to go and take upon what's given to you. For example, if I have 6'8" fat young guard me, do I really want to be AI? Do I really want to be Kobe trying to go against, say, Thad Young on the perimeter, trying to show him I can cross him over? Is that the best for the team, or is that good for one-on-one in the schoolyard? That's one-on-one in the schoolyard to me. If I got Valanciunas or Mark Gasol on me, do I really, you know, now I want to maybe go pick and pop, take him off the dribble. I don't think you could come in with a clean slate or to keep my mind thought saying, oh, this time I'm going to do it because I'm going to show him everything. It's not the point of being a 90, it's the point of being a smart basketball player. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I have to say about that. So you can have all the skills in the world, but your skills are only good as how you use them. Do I want to be on the perimeter when I got a two guard me? Come on, man. That don't make much sense to me.
I hear you on that one. Mark, speaking with Mark Jackson, NBC Sports Philadelphia, Sixers pre- and post-game analyst. We're trying to figure out what to do with Al Horford at this point because I don't see any reason why he should be shooting 9 threes in a game when he's only 2-for-9 from beyond the arc and 4-for-14 just from the field in general. What can happen in this offense? What would you like to see more from for Al Horford to kind of get him going?
You know, I think Al just trying to get shots where he can get shots. I think he's just lost out there, and I don't think that's mainly him. I think that's him trying to find his role in this system. He said, okay, I can't get many post-ups. All right, let me start shooting threes if I'm open. And maybe I'll get hot teams to play me, and maybe I'll make adjustments to his game. I really think he's just trying to adjust to help himself, to help this team. I think he's kind of roaming lost out there because when you got him and Ben on the floor, Ben is doing a lot of picking and diving. Ben is doing a lot of work around the box. So because of today's game and the way the floor spacing is important, I don't think he can get going on the box right now with Ben on the floor. So I think he has to rely on Ben forcing double teams, teams helping off him. And out of the whole lineup, that's the guy they're going to come off of, Al Horford. They're going to live and die with Al shooting threes, and he's just trying to get hot. Is he capable of hitting it? Yes, he is. But 9 threes is too many.
When you look at what this team needs, some people are already starting to look at the trade deadline coming up in mid to late February. What do you think this team needs? Would you go out there and get another piece, or would you try to ride with what you got in $130 million payroll?
I think it's going to be hard because I think this team has not, like I said again, has not gelled as one, has not brung their A game together as a unit. I think it's still some individuals out there trying to find a way. And they're really trying to match with each other. But until they can hone a self, if you bring another player in, I think.
Oh, Mark, we lost you for a second there, buddy. We got you?
Sorry, I'm here.
Oh, okay. You were talking about if you bring in another player with a team that's already trying to gel through the first half of the season.
Yeah, so you got a team that hasn't gelled in the first half of the season. Now you're going to bring another piece in and try to have them figure it out with less than half the season remaining. I just think for me personally, I would try to ride it out this season with what I have. I would start maybe looking at using people differently in my lineup, like the Matisse Thybulle starting was a great piece. Put Tobias back and forth. You know, we could say it was for defensive purposes on the net. Two outstanding point guards in Dinwiddie and Kyrie Irving. But I really feel as though it put people back in their natural positions. Al Horford at the 5 and Tobias at the 4. I really think that was a great look.
I agree with you on that. By the way, February 6th is the NBA trade deadline. I thought it was later than that. It seems a little early this year.
They moved it up this year because they said it was causing too much distraction. Every year for the last 4 years, there's always been a guy in the All-Star game who was focused on because his name is about to be traded.
Gotcha.
Mark, talking about if you don't bring another player in and you have this team, and come playoff time, you're going to have to shrink your substitutions down to, as we know, teams go 8-9 deep during the playoffs, maybe a 10th specialist. But if you had to go just 8 or 9 deep with this team currently constructed, who are the 3 or 4 coming off the bench for you?
Well, I think they're going to continue to start the starting 5 that's there. So for me, I'm bringing Burke or Neto, depending on who I'm playing against. Matisse Thybulle, of course. James Ennis. I really like James. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I know they kind of played without James the other night versus the Pacers. That was interesting to me. I think those 3 are my 8. And then that 4th guy is up in the air. But I think I'm going Matisse Thybulle, James Ennis, and either Burke or Neto.
What's going on with Mike Scott?
Mike Scott is trying to find his way. Mike Scott, he's a 3-and-D guy. He's a power forward, but he's a floor spacer. And I like him. He's still shooting the ball, what we need him to do. And because he is a shooter, he's going to go up and down. His shot's going to fall streaky, and sometimes they're not. But the objective with that Mike Scott is he can never stop shooting that ball. And, you know, his teammates can never stop using confidence in him, because once you do, you can ruin the shooter for the year. So I think he has to keep maintaining his shot, keep shooting it, and eventually a drop. He's just going through a little dry spell.
Speaking with Mark Jackson, Mark, we've never done this with you before, but we need you to kind of, I don't know if it's not coach speak, it's not player speak, it's actually announcer speak. And I know you're busy and you're watching the game and the great broadcast that Mark Zumoff does and Al Abdanabi and Serena Winters. But we broadcast the games on the radio station with the great Tom McGinnis. So we were hoping, Mark, that you could tell us what Tom is saying here, because we can't make it out. Can I put you on hold to listen to this little like 7-second soundbite? All right, I just want to hear from you what he's saying. Here is Tom McGinnis last night during the game.
LeVert with the ball. This guy has got a boner, Caris LeVert.
All right, what did you hear him say? Do you need to hear it again, Mark? Do you want to hear it one more time?
Yeah, let me hear it.
Just one more time for the sake of accuracy. Go ahead.
LeVert with the ball. This guy has got a boner, Caris LeVert.
He ain't saying boner, is he?
Yeah, that's what we went with.
I think, now here's what common sense and conventional wisdom tells me. He is saying that Terrence LeVert has a high,
boner.
Has a
he's saying boner.
Hey, a motor.
We have to look at
guys,
the tape.
Guys, come on.
High boner.
Mark, while you were analyzing the game last night, did you notice that at all?
Not at all, but I'm going to say motor. I'm going to say he has a high motor.
You're a classy man. You're all class, Mark Jackson. You know what?
I are saying with boner.
Like a typical Temple grad, you, my friend, are all class.
Oh, thank you, man. But he had a motor. Big motor.
Mark Jackson, NBC Sports Philadelphia. Sixers pre and post. Always great to talk to you, Mark. Thanks so much, bud.
Yes, sir. Have a good one.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.